I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Brinson Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Friday, May the 6th. If you're listening to the audio version, if you're hanging out with us live on YouTube at 1 p.m. on Thursday, May 5th, happy Cinco de Mayo. We are live every single day at 1 p.m. for the rest of time. All of eternity. In fact, the 2022 draft may never end. Joining me to continue to discuss the fallout of said draft, Chris Trapasso, Josh Edwards. What's up, fellas?
Thanks for having me on for like the 50th time. And what's funny that you just said that, my dad, who's a little older, mentioned to me today, this morning when I dropped my daughter off at his house, he's like, why are you still talking about the draft? It's over. And I'm like, well, I mean, I probably have to spend some time recapping it, but I'm, loved all this, pre-draft process, covering the draft, but I'm definitely going to not be angry when this week is over, when we can kind of chill out a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we spend months talking about where these prospects may go. We got to talk a little bit about where they've actually gone once it's happened.
Good point, Josh. By the way, Josh, do you get a little sense of what Ryan Wilson deals with mentally? Like, you guys have been doing this for like 4 weeks. Right, like 4 weeks, you come on like three times a week. Ryan Wilson's been doing it for like 12 years. He might be a psychopath. Like, who would deal with me for 12 years? You know what I'm saying? I would.
Well, that's probably why he was drinking tequila on the broadcast.
That's 100% why he was drinking tequila at 1 p.m. on a Tuesday. It's like, whoa. I did see Kyle Stackpole, one of our editors at CBS. Was tweeting with Ryan about like a 13,000 word story he did where he talked about it on the pod. He was recapping the draft classes, but Wilson did it his own like way, right? He didn't do grades, and so naturally everyone was mad at him for every single class.
That's on brand for the Twitter mob for sure.
Yes, it is. Okay, we are going to talk about some fantasy options, some landing spots, as Josh so eloquently teased, how guys ended up doing, or like where guys landed that were good fits and might work out well for them. Let's start, Josh, with you and the first running back off the board, Breece Hall. He's like -300 to be a first running back off the board, and the question then becomes, did he land at a good spot? Is it a good spot for him? Does the scheme work? Will the Jets be good enough? 36 overall, there have to be high expectations. What are your thoughts on Breece Hall's landing spot?
Well, it was a fantastic fit. Going into a situation where he's not going to be entirely leaned upon with Michael Carter II there as well. From a fantasy perspective, you would expect Breece Hall to get the bulk of the carries considering his size. So, it's a great fantasy option, but I think it's just an ideal fit from a situational perspective. I mean, he walks in where he doesn't have to shoulder all of the expectations his rookie season. And I think the Jets are probably going to have a fairly balanced offense. I mean, they added Garrett Wilson this offseason to go with Elijah Moore and to go with Corey Davis. And they picked up those tight ends. And you've got this balanced offense now where you can use this wide zone blocking scheme. and really open things up for this offense. So I think it's a fantastic fit, not only from the perspective of, you know, fantasy evaluation, but I think it's just a very natural fit in terms of his talent.
Traps, how do you think it works for Breece Hall in New York with the Jets? Is that I keep wanting to say that Mike McDaniel is with the Jets. He's obviously not. It is interesting that like a half of the AFC East is being run by Kyle Shanahan disciples. You think they'd be smarter than to go try to mess with Belichick and Josh Allen?
Yeah, seriously. I think a lot of what Josh has pointed out is spot on in terms of the scheme fit. The only concern that I have, and yes, the Jets did pick an offensive lineman, Max Mitchell, in the fourth round. I'm a little concerned about the offensive line. I don't think it's a bad offensive front, and it's better than what the Jets have fielded over the past couple seasons. But if Mekhi Becton is he 400 pounds? There was the speculation, and maybe it was just smoke pre-draft, that he wasn't going to play another down. There were some people that thought that. I think Elijah Vera Tucker can be a good run-blocking guard. They signed Laken Tomlinson. I just think that the offensive line, we always say that like running backs, efficiency, effectiveness, whatever, productivity is directly tied, of course, to the offensive line. That would be really my only concern with Breece Hall not being like amazing as a rookie. I still think he'll be solid. But if it takes time for that Jets offensive line to gel, I think that could lead to kind of a slower start in September for Breece Hall.
Someone in the chat, we are live on YouTube, of course. Someone in the chat says Wilson and Breech look weird today. Yeah, who's the Wilson and who's the Breech of Traps and Josh? I guess like not I don't sure. know.
Would Breech wear a Rambo shirt, or would that be more Wilson? I feel like that would be Breech. Well,
yeah, okay. Probably more Wilson. More importantly, George Mountain in the chat. And we're live on YouTube. Every day at 1 o'clock, you can come chat and hang out with us while on your lunch break. George Mountain asks, what do you think about Cook, as in James Cook, as in Dalvin Cook's brother, in Buffalo as a landing spot? Traps, since you're the Buffalo guy.
I think it's a good one. I think he's going to be way down the pecking order in terms of targets. Obviously, with Diggs, they love Gabriel Davis. They kind of sneaky signed Jamison Crowder, who's going to fill into that Cole Beasley role immediately, and I think will be a good underneath kind of possession option. But the biggest area of concern, or what fans were clamoring for the Bills running back group last like 3 years, was having a speedster. They signed Matt Breda, never really amounted to much, had a few games where he flashed a little. But I think with James Cook being a low 4.4 guy, he's going to be that kind of split out, put him in the slot, get him on angle routes, screen passes. I think the fit is good, and it's just a matter of it's going to be hard for him to get the ball, at least as a rookie, unless he's hitting 60 and 70 yard touchdowns. But I do think that was kind of the Bills addressing receiver a little bit earlier than people were expecting, that he does have that ability to flex out and play in the slot or even out wide. So the fit is good, just not a ton of targets for him.
Yeah, I didn't love the value in which they took him, but I think it is a natural fit in terms of his role within that offense.
Let me ask you this, Josh. Would you rather the Bills have drafted Breece Hall in the first round or James Cook where they did?
That has to be taken into consideration. I think they made the absolute right decision to take Kyrie Elam in the first round and come back with James Cook. You can talk about the idea of taking more of a well-balanced running back in the second round instead of James Cook, but with what Buffalo needs, Cook actually makes more sense for them. So I understand the arguments just from where I had him personally graded. I didn't think it was I thought it was a little bit of a stretch to be taken where he was.
Like, super bizarre. I mean, it's not a bizarre take, but like, here's my James Cook hot take. James Cook is going to be the running back version of TJ Watt.
I'm going to need you to explain that a little bit more.
Yeah. I was thinking Derek Watt at first. I'm like, fullback?
No, he's not going to be JJ Watt. Maybe TJ Watt's too good. I think he fell in the draft, and the only reason he went as high as he did is people are like, man, he's Dalvin Cook's brother. Like, he's just going to be good because, like, he's Dalvin Cook's brother. He looks and plays like Dalvin Cook. Like, Dalvin Cook is incredible. Dalvin Cook fell in the draft. I think he's going to be good. He's going to be good. And people are going to be like, oh, duh. Of course he's good. He's Dalvin Cook's brother. Why didn't we see this coming? Like that happened to TJ Watt. He fell in the draft, and people were like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Another guy from this family is really good at football, and we just completely whiffed on it. That's so weird.
I could see him, though, throughout the season, if he does hit some big plays, either as a runner or a receiver, for the Bills to like slowly phase out Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, if he's really that dynamic. I agreed with Josh. I didn't have him as a second-round talent because I think it's more about his well-roundedness as compared to being a really good running back. But that's really what the Bills have been looking for and needing in that running back room, speed. They've not had that during the Josh Allen era in terms of someone that could be a full-time player. And I think, again, if Cook shows that he can hit a 70-yard touchdown, something that Devin Singletary hasn't done very frequently, he could be like the running back one by November for the Bills.
Yeah, and one thing to consider that RJ mentioned on yesterday's show is that with we're not talking about the fact that Brian Daboll's gone enough, you know? I mean, is Sean McDermott going to take more of a hold on the offensive game planning? Is he going to say, hey, Ken Dorsey, run the ball a ton? How are they going to separate those running back targets, et cetera, et cetera? So, I mean, like, that's another thing. Like, when we're projecting what the Bills might do and how they work from a fantasy perspective at the running back position and at the wide receiver position, like, I don't think you can just, like, blindly assume that everything will just be the status quo because you did lose your offensive coordinator. That's just, that's a thing. Also, from the chat, yeah. Jungle Goat.
That's big.
Who has apparently is that an NFT?
Looks like an NFT. Made their way into the Pick Six podcast.
That's right. As a Seahawks fan, can anyone from the podcast tell me what in the hell they're doing? This is relevant to today's topic because the Seahawks did in fact draft Kenneth Walker, one of the better running backs. He was the second running back taken too, right? Isn't that right, Josh?
Yeah.
So he's a second running back taken by a team that loves to run the football and a team that is currently employing Drew Lock as their quarterback. To answer your question from a broad perspective, Jungle Goat, I have no bleeping clue what the Seahawks are doing. I think Pete Carroll believes that he can win with Drew Lock doing some YOLO down the field ball, running the ball a bunch, and playing great defense. However, I am not remotely confident that the run game will work or that the defense will be any good. They drafted Charles Cross in the first round. He's their number one overall pick. Everyone likes Charles Cross, but he's a pass blocking, guy. Like, his pass blocking is elite. If you wanted to draft an elite run blocking tackle, it was Ikem Ekwonu or Evan Neal. Now maybe Charles Cross is great at it. Who knows? These things work out differently depending on, like what prospects we're talking about, and things change as they get to the pros. Boy Mafe, great pick. Kenneth Walker, 41st overall, feels a little rich for a team like this, Josh.
I don't know. So I've had to walk back a little bit.
You hate James Cook. You love Kenneth Walker's great. He's great.
He is. He was my top rated running back. So okay. I don't have an issue with it whatsoever. I've had to walk back my takes on Seattle a little bit because I wasn't sure what they were doing coming into the draft process. It looked like they were trying to compete, whereas I thought they needed to rebuild. And this draft class, I thought, was a breath of fresh air. I mean, they took Charles Cross. They took Abe Lucas. You get some pieces along that offensive line. You get Boye Mafe, who is at a premier position. I think he's a great value where they took him. Kenneth Walker, again, my top-rated running back. They've had issues keeping those players healthy in recent years. And as you noted, it's a run-heavy offense. They need bodies in that room. So I had no issue with it whatsoever. You take a couple of long boundary cornerbacks like Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen on day two and day three. I mean, that's good value. I actually enjoyed what Seattle did over the course of these 3 days, and I had been critical of them to this point. My only question is, Pete Carroll has commonly said his mantra is always compete. So is this roster going to compete with Drew Lock and Geno Smith? No, I don't think it will. And he did an interview with NFL media during the draft, and his comments about Drew Lock were not flattering whatsoever. In fact, I came away thinking that it was probably Geno Smith that was going to be the starting quarterback for them in week one rather than Drew Lock.
Really?
It was not a huge endorsement of Lock whatsoever. He was essentially like, I haven't had a chance to work with him yet, but he kind of led you to believe that maybe what people had been jumping to conclusions in the media was not accurate. So I am still of the belief that they are going to heavily consider Baker Mayfield in the next couple of months, because I can't imagine you go through minicamp with Drew Lock and Geno Smith and you're hoping to compete and you're saying, okay, these guys can get us where we need to go. But it's going to be an inner struggle, because are they rebuilding? Are they going to try to compete for this season? If they are trying to rebuild, run it back with Drew Lock and Geno Smith. Like, you know, let those guys battle it out. If you end up with a top five pick, who cares? Get your quarterback next year. You're in a better better position moving forward. But if you truly want to compete, I don't understand how they could possibly not circle back around the Baker Mayfield before it's all said and done.
Yeah. I tend to agree with that, that it's like, I mean, the weird thing about it was they did this. So Baker, there's some like, was it Baker, one of that podcast or something, like Baker's like, yeah, I probably go to Seahawks or something like that. And then the next day they went, like, we signed Geno Smith. It was like, F you, Baker. Like, no, you're not coming here. You don't come here. We sign you. And Baker would be like a perfect fit for Pete Carroll, I would think, too. Just that like sort of brash, competitive nature, make a lot of sense. You want to run the ball, take some play action shots, bootleg him out, get him on the move. It does make too much sense for it not to work. It's the whole thing. Here's the whole thing with the Seahawks that I can't like get my head around, is that Pete Carroll is like 70 years old, right? I mean, it's like 70-year-old adult males or females are not like heavily interested in, like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to work for 10 more years. You know, like you are getting to the age where you are thinking about retirement. Now, if it's 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, and he can keep going. Like, Pete Carroll is, you know, still very energetic and does not at all look his age. I mean, he looks his age, but he's not, you know, he doesn't act his age, I guess. Although he's looked 70 for like 20 years. at any rate, like, but they don't, they want to be competitive, and I just don't know how they're going to be, is my whole thing, Traps.
Yeah, so I had this theory that was like a galaxy brain idea that Pete Carroll's having, like that he's always wanted to run the football. Like when Russell Wilson was like the most efficient quarterback in football, he was still saying, we want to run the ball, play good defense. Maybe Pete Carroll's just like, let's have a bad quarterback so I can just say, hey, our quarterbacks aren't very good. We need to run the ball a lot with Rashad Penny and Ken Walker and Chris Carson, and have this stable of big backs that can shoulder like 35 to 40 carries a game. That's kind of what I've thought at this point. I agree with Josh. They should make a play for Baker Mayfield, but if they don't, that's what I think is going on inside the 70-year-old mind of Pete Carroll. Like, let's just have bad quarterbacks so we have to run the ball a lot. And that, if that's the case, I'm okay with Ken Walker at 41 overall. He was tied with Isaiah Spiller as my running back 1-2, but I don't think picking a running back at 41 overall is ever a good idea in terms of overall value, unless you're getting a truly like transcendent running back. And I don't think Ken Walker is that type. It kind of reminded me of when the Lions picked DeAndre Swift in the top of the second round a few years ago. Like, they weren't really a great roster. You shouldn't be prioritizing the, you know, one of the least valuable positions that early in round two. But I think Ken Walker is a good player. And it is kind of hard to tell what the Seahawks are trying to do. Although after the draft, I think, like Josh was kind of alluding to, that they're trying to be competitive in a watered down NFC this season.
Yeah, entirely possible. If I had to guess on the Seahawks right now from a touch distribution perspective at the running back position, Pete Carroll looks, first of all, there's two R's in Pete Carroll, but yes, thank you, Stu. Pete Carroll looks great. Looks younger than Brinson. I mean, no. Just, I wish I looked like Pete Carroll.
At least I'll you spell your last name right.
That's right. Yeah. I know. Yeah. You missed up Pete Carroll's last name, but you got my last name right instead of Benson or Bunsen or what, Brunson or whatever people usually write. I'd sign him. Like, I would swap bodies with Pete Carroll right now. Like, give me 70 Pete Carroll versus 40 Brinson. Believe me, buddy. Pete Carroll's in much better physical condition than I am at this point. But from a running back touch perspective, I think that Chris Carson might be donezo. Like, neck injuries.
They have Travis Homer. That's true. It's not a bad
thing. You draft Kenneth Walker and bring back Rashad Penny. Chris Carson was your bell cow. And Chris Carson's great, but he's 27. You know, he no interest anywhere else. like, I think they are worried he won't be able to play in 2022 right away. And as a result, that's why they wanted to draft Kenneth Walker with one of those second round picks. I mean, like, neck surgeries are just not good for football players. Like, you can't play football if you have a major neck issue, because, I mean, frankly, it's very, very not safe. So I think I would be worried about that. And by the way, we should point out, Jungle Goat noted in the chat that the NFT there is actually Knights of Degen, which I have seen. I had seen it before, because friend of the podcast, Cynthia Freeland, has been on the show multiple times. Actually, Cynthia was on live from the Super Bowl one time. And generally awesome person. She is involved in that project as well. So, yeah, I can't get myself. I wish I'd bought like a Bored Ape, but, you know, didn't. Missed the chance. Probably not going to buy any more NFTs ever again. I'll let Debo do the NFT buying. Anyway, from a touch distribution, I would say that I bet it could end up being like 60-40 Walker, Rashad Penny. Because I just don't know. I mean, Penny was awesome down the stretch last year. I'm just not sure that he's like, that's going to be like, he's going to be a full, you know, ready to be the full-time guy and stay completely healthy for the full course of the season. And I think they know that. That's why they invested heavily in Kenneth Walker. They are worried that Carson and Penny won't make it a full season, and then their whole plan will just fall apart. Over under for wins of the current quarterbacks.
I was going to say 6.5, but yeah, that might be a 6.5
or 5.5. Would you take over or under on 6.5?
I think under.
Yeah, probably.
It's a tough division.
Yeah, Bored Ape Yacht Club, a few hundred thousand dollars for one of those apes. What are we doing?
Wow. My word.
I have a picture. I mean, I let Wilson rain on the NFTs. Knights of Degen for less than $1,000. I don't know if I'm ready to talk my wife into me buying a picture of a knight. It's over under 6 at Caesars, by the way, with the over minus 130. 6 is probably like if the Seahawks won 6 games, I wouldn't be shocked.
Which is, yeah, that seems right.
That's an indictment of the Seahawks, though, I guess. Okay. Traps. Isaiah Spiller lands with the Chargers, went 123 overall, and Snoop Connor shortly thereafter 154 overall with the Jaguars. Which one is more likely to have a impactful fantasy / statistical production in 2022?
I'm going to go with Snoop Connor of the Jaguars. I think Isaiah Spiller is definitely the more talented running back, but obviously Austin Ekeler is kind of standing in his way from being like a premier fantasy guy. With Snoop Connor, here's kind of my thought process, that you have a new head coach in Doug Peterson. The GM, Trent Baalke, was part of the organization when they signed James Robinson as an undrafted free agent in 2020. And of course, part of the Urban Meyer brain trust that selected Travis Etienne in the first round. But I think we always see head coaches want their own guys on the field. And now Doug Peterson was a part of the team that, or the front office coaching staff that selected Snoop Connor in the 5th round. He's dynamic and he's a power back. He's a one cut slasher that if the Jaguars do want to incorporate more zone running, zone blocking scheme, stretch runs, wide zone type plays, like usually what was run in Doug Peterson's offense in Philly, I think Snoop Connor is the exact guy that could emerge as this next late round pick in Jacksonville. Are they going to be in running situations very often, trailing a ton? Probably not. But the Chargers, if we're kind of comparing these two backs, threw the ball 63% of the time last season. It was the 4th highest pass rate in football, and you have Justin Herbert. So you got to think this is not going to be a super run-heavy team. You have Austin Ekeler, although I do think Spiller will help push Austin Ekeler into more of a slot role. Ekeler ran over 400 snaps as a wide receiver, or ran a route last season. It was the 4th highest among all running backs in football. So I think there's a spot for Spiller to produce, but I actually think Snoop Connor, the 5th rounder, even behind a 1,000-yard back and a former first-round running back, actually will be the better fantasy producer because he's talented, and I think Doug Peterson will want him on the field more.
Yeah, that'll be tough. I mean, it's a tough situation for both of those young players because of the depth at the running back position. The Chargers, you know, you've got Justin Jackson there as well, I believe. So I wasn't as big of a fan of Isaiah Spiller during the process just because I didn't think he played that fast on the field. But he does give you a different element than what you get from Austin Ekeler. So I could see him being that second running back for Los Angeles, whereas I still think Jacksonville is probably going to feed carries to James Robinson and Travis Etienne. They almost have to with Etienne just because of the investment that they made last year, especially with Trent Baalke still there. I mean, he's obviously has some attachment to that selection. So I would probably lean towards Isaiah Spiller of the two, but a situation where they're probably going to go in and provide depth immediately and then just fill in depending on how injuries and stuff affect the depth chart.
Yeah. Both, you know, like I think both are worth like flyers for sure. You know, if you're drafting in fantasy and they'll probably go higher than you think in like dynasty drafts. But, you know,
I think Spiller, especially because that was kind of a well-known name.
Yeah. Bigger name. And like Austin Ekeler's elite, but it's very obvious that they are willing to utilize Ekeler in a more pass friendly type of fashion and to, you know, and to like let somebody else sort of try to be the, you know, like they need depth at the running back position. And then the Jaguars are sort of a wild card because of the Robinson thing. And I'm sure you guys touched on this as my internet crapped out for the 50th straight day. You know, like we don't know Doug Peterson never really had a bell cow, doesn't lean on one running back a ton in his time in Philly. And the guys that he has between Robinson, Etienne, and now Snoop don't like profile as somebody who might just magically take over that spot and dominate. I mean, even in the Super Bowl win, what is it? Corey Clement catches the touchdown, right? And I mean, like, you know, all kinds of guys that they're utilizing. They were utilizing in Philly. I think I would expect it will be a similar setup in Jacksonville. All right, Josh, wide receivers. Treylon Burks to the Titans, 18th overall. Sky Moore to the Chiefs at 54th overall are two really interesting names for guys that could be heavily utilized this season, maybe for different reasons. Like Sky Moore could just be the slot guy in Andy Reid's offense from Jump Street, and that would make him a monster. Treylon Burks, I'm just not sure he can't not be productive based on the like what's around him.
That's exactly right. I mean, you kind of made my argument for me. You've got a situation in Tennessee where he has to take on the touches left by AJ Brown. I mean, there's just an easy vision to see how he would be used in that offense as a guy that can be used at or around the line of scrimmage. But I think he also works well on a vertical plane. So you're seeing a guy that can be used at all three levels of the field, and they're going to need him to produce. So I could see him having a larger, if you're doing a, if you have a full points per reception, I'm probably leaning towards Treylon Burks just because I think he's probably going to get more opportunities. But I also think that Sky Moore is a player that's going to create a lot of opportunities for himself in that Kansas City offense. Somebody that can make plays after the catch, somebody that is working with Patrick Mahomes now and is going to be put in a position to succeed. And I think he's the best wide receiver on that roster already. He's a guy that's going to come in and command shares from day one. So it was a great value for Kansas City, and I think he's going to make a big impact on the roster this season.
Yeah, one thing on Treylon Burks, the Titans, I mean, we're talking about Burks and Sky Moore. The Chiefs and the Titans are the two teams that have the highest amount of available targets from last season. So, and with the Titans, actually a higher percentage. 67% of the Ryan Tannehill targets last season need to be replaced. So I totally agree with Josh. I liked Sky Moore a little bit better than Treylon Burks, actually, and just in terms of him as a prospect. But if you're looking from a fantasy perspective, even if, of course, you know, you like Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid's brain more than what Treylon Burks has in Tennessee, there's just more targets. There's more footballs that are going to be thrown Treylon Burks' way.
Don't disagree at all. And we've seen plenty of times with Andy Reid and wide receivers where they don't make an impact right away. I think it's just part of learning the offense and getting on the same page with the quarterback. I mean, I'm trying to think, maybe Jeremy Maclin had a big rookie season, but yeah, even like Deshaun Jackson, I want to say Tyreek Hill. I could be dead wrong about Tyreek Hill, though. Tyreek Hill's rookie season, he had.
He was pretty good, but I think it was mostly late yards. In the season. Yeah, that's not a ton, I guess.
Six touchdowns, but like, I mean, I would guess that, I mean, would you take over Sky Moore, 593 yards, six touchdowns? A lot of mouths to feed there, man. I mean, like, that's, I mean,
yeah, there are.
Like, he might have a ton of catches. I mean, Tyreek Hill finished with 61 catches, 593 yards, six touchdowns. Like, that's not who Tyreek Hill is as a player from a statistical perspective. He only started one game. Like, if you're expecting Sky Moore to go for 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns, you've lost your mind. Like, that's just not going to happen.
One caveat, though, that was with Alex Smith in that rookie season.
That is true.
That was the difference. That's the only difference. But yeah, I agree. And I think in that Tyreek Hill rookie season, a lot of his production was later in the season, if I remember that correctly. It wasn't out of the gate. We knew Tyreek Hill was going to be amazing. It was like, oh, this guy's a pretty good gadget player. But that happened in like November and December of his rookie season.
Yeah. I mean, Tyreek Hill was not like there was no chatter about Tyreek Hill for rookie of the year. That's all I'm saying. Like, no. if you're expecting Sky Moore to just come in and be Tyreek Hill,
yeah,
you're a lunatic. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll answer one. Oh, sorry, Josh, did you want to say?
I was just going to say, with 17 games, that's about 39 receiving yards per game now. So, I mean, it's certainly reasonable, but I think you do have to temper your expectations with a lot of these rookies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, look, he could have a great season. He could win rookie of the year. I just think when you have that many mouths to feed in KC and a system that is designed to distribute inherently, it's like he's probably gonna be a great player because Andy Reid drafted him. But yeah, you know, like anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, we answer more chat questions and talk about impact rookies next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul. The designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Okay, DM Mark 42 wants to know Brinson. Who's the Falcons? What?
He's just setting you up to say Jordan Davis right here.
Is he tricking me? Who's the Falcons have really drafted at number 8, especially with Mechie Pickens and Moore all on the board in the second round? I mean, Jordan Davis, obviously. very clearly, they had their eyes on Drake London the whole time. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, like, that's who they wanted the whole time.
I agree. And even though Garrett Wilson was my top-rated wide receiver, I think you look at the situation now where you have Drake London and you have Kyle Pitts, that gives you kind of a unique mismatch when you're going up against other teams. Whereas if you have Garrett Wilson, yeah, he's a fantastic player, but you suddenly don't have to worry about the size on both sides of the field. So while they do have their deficiencies on offense this coming season, I think that does give them a little bit of leverage on that side of the ball.
One thing that I'll say about that, which I find a little interesting and maybe concerning about Falcons GM Terry Fontenot, last year it came out when they picked Kyle Pitts. I think there was like a draft video where Terry Fontenot was like, nope, we are picking Kyle Pitts. We knew from the get-go we're not fielding any offers. We're not trading back. that was almost like hard-headed to me, especially for a first-time GM. And I think, Brinson, you're right that they – and like we've said, they were zeroed in on Drake London, and like that was it. They weren't going to pick anyone else. I don't think we got that draft video of when they made the selection at number 8 overall. Right. But what this person is pointing out, DeMart here, I think that's a good point that there was actually a run on receivers in round 2, guys that were pretty highly regarded that they could have gone maybe in a different direction, Jordan Davis, or added to the defense in round 1 and then picked a receiver in round 2. It's just kind of weird that with two top 10 picks in a row, they weren't really dealing with any other possibilities. They found their guy probably in January or February, and then we're not going to move off that player.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if that's the best way to go about it.
No, I mean, like, I agree with you. Like, I don't like the, I like to be a little more flexible, and you need to have multiple pathways to whatever your like decision making or in the draft. At the same point, you could also, you know, if you wanted to play devil's avocado, you could say, hey, this guy, he's locked in on who he likes. He's got conviction. And he's rolling.
I can see that.
I understand. Okay. Traps. Romeo, is it Dubs?
Dubs. Yes.
Go get right, the Dubs. Josh,
you're the pronunciation guy. It's Dubs, right?
I believe so. Yeah
it's Dubs.
Josh, like, you idiots. It's Dubs. Romeo Dubs and Charlie Kohler. Two pass catchers that were taken later in the draft that you kind of like, Dubs by the Packers and Kohler by the Ravens. Talk to us about their the possible impact that they might have. Is Kohler the guy that they feel like basically has wide receiver tendencies, or is that the other tight end that they took? No,
that's Kohler, I think. Right? I watched that video from their director of college scouting. I think that's he compared him to Mark Andrews.
Was talking to DaCosta about it. Eric DaCosta, the GM.
The other is Isaiah Likely.
Isaiah Likely, yeah. Who's more likely to be a receiving back? Likely or Kohler?
I think Kohler is a better wide receiver. I actually compared him pre-draft to Mark Andrews. I think his route running ability, his like how he separates in his routes, catches everything, and that's with a corner draped on him, a linebacker down the seam, in the back of the end zone, the contested catches, high point ability. I think we're all very reminiscent of Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews is probably a little better after the catch, but I think Kohler has the athleticism to be that type. And it feels like the Ravens want to be more of a two tight end set team. They haven't really had the personnel the past couple seasons. Nick Boyle's mostly a blocking tight end. And they didn't draft a wide receiver. So it's like Rashad Bateman, Devin Duvernay. There's a few kind of randoms at the bottom of the roster now that you traded away Marquise Brown. It's really Mark Andrews, and I think now Charlie Kohler could get a lot of targets as a rookie, and I just think he's talented. In terms of Romeo Dubs, Christian Watson, of course, trading up for him in the second round. He's that big play guy, kind of jet sweep and go route. Like, that's where he won at North Dakota State. He's got 4.36 speed. I think Romeo Dubs is really good down the field too. And I think Aaron Rodgers is still one of the best deep ball throwers in football. And that's kind of the Matt LaFleur system, to run those stretch plays and then play action, take those deep shots down the field. I think what we saw at Nevada from Dubs, catching passes from Carson Strong in 2020 and this past season, he's a legitimate vertical threat that tracks it very well. I thought that was great value in the fifth round. And he could be kind of that MVS in this offense after they lost him to the Chiefs.
Just real quickly, just to clarify. So is it Kohler? Kohler. So Likely is the guy that they believe is more the wide receiver tendencies guy, because they wanted to take Calvin Austin with the Likely pick. And then the Steelers took Austin, the pick before them. And so they pivoted to Likely. But I mean, I think, you know, obviously both guys they like, and they took Kohler first. Let's throw up offensive rookie of the year odds. I want to point out that, and this is not just a Caesars thing, because I've seen this everywhere. And I understand we're just a few days removed from the draft. But you know what? If you gotta throw odds up, at least make them reasonable. This is ridiculous. There are five guys under 10-1 to win offensive rookie of the year. And there's like 20 guys under 20-1. And I'm not complaining about our wonderful partner here at Caesars. I'm complaining about the trend. Look at this. This is ridiculous. Desmond Ridder is 16-1 to win offensive crazy. Rookie of the year. He is a third round pick for a team that is going to win maybe five games and is not even the starting quarterback and has accuracy issues. And his best pass catchers are Kyle Pitts and Drake London, first and second year players. Like, I'm not trying. It is silly.
Like, why is it like that?
The Super Bowl too. Everybody does it with these odds. First round leaders and it with golf odds. It's ridiculous. Like, be reasonable about it. I'm sorry you got torched on a couple futures, but you can't just scale it all back and make it all under 20-1 because you don't know what's going on. But everybody's got to have odds up before everyone else because it's the big thing now. Matt Corral. Sorry, I'm done. It just drives me nuts. Matt Corral? The realistic odds. Like, is it likely that one of those six guys wins the award? Maybe, but it's not. They shouldn't all, like, those guys should not all be under 10-1. Like, that is not the actual correct implied probability of what should happen in this. Having said all that, would you bet any of these?
Wow.
I wouldn't bet any of these under 10-1. You can't.
I wouldn't. Can you scroll down a little bit, Debo? Is there
like Drake London 5-1?
Man.
Malik Willis, 12-1. Malik Willis is very likely not starting.
Maybe Chris Olave at plus 1,200 or Christian Watson. Like,
what does he have to? What
it's not, it, it's not big enough.
The year? Yeah, like 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns?
Yeah, and he's got Michael Thomas there. I don't really – there's not anyone, especially at these odds. Like, you're
Sam Howell was a fifth-round pick on a team that gave up multiple draft picks to select a veteran quarterback. Granted, we all agree that Carson Wentz stinky poo. Sam Howell's 25-1 to win offensive rookie of the year. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Sorry. I'm finally snapped and lost it.
There's not any, I don't know if Josh sees any, but there's not, especially like you're saying, Brinson, and I agree, at these odds that are like, oh, this really stands out, because you're right. Yeah. If Sam Howell's plus 2,500, then I don't know what we're doing.
I mean, here. Desmond Ridder, Matt Corral, and Sam Howell are all not starting for their teams right now, as of right now. So maybe this is a set, like, these guys, the odds will fall when these guys start being officially named backups.
Yeah.
But you know what? Just don't give us any odds. Nobody needs to put up odds. Just to protect yourselves. Like, it's ridiculous. Anyway, all right. Let's talk defensive guys. I don't need to keep ranting about this. Josh is like, please, old man, sir. This is a Wendy's. Josh, Kyrie Elam, Devontae Wyatt, Logan Hall. Your top three sort of defensive impact guys. Elam, of course, taking 23rd overall by the Bills. Wyatt, 28th overall by the Packers, and Logan Hall, the first pick of the second round. Somebody that clearly the Buccaneers locked in on. How do you see these guys fitting in and being day one impact defensive players?
Yeah, Kyrie Elam, a big physical cornerback that can play in man coverage. He can play his in zone if you need him to. Opposite Tre'Davious White, he's probably going to be targeted this year, so he's going to have opportunities to make plays on the football. We've seen how studious he is from his plane ride to Buffalo and his interview with the Bills at the NFL Combine. So you would think that his transition to the NFL maybe is not as steep as it is for other cornerbacks coming into the league. But I think he's just a very good cornerback. He was my third rated cornerback in this draft class because I think he's got those man coverage skills. So I think he translates very easily to the NFL. I also liked Villanova cornerback Christian Benford, who Buffalo took later in the draft as well. A guy that has all the traits that you look at as a developmental prospect. So I like what they did in the secondary. Devontae Wyatt, I think, just allows you to use Kenny Clark the way that you would want to use him. He's going to be able to see the field early. He's probably not going to put up the stats that some of these penetrating defensive tackles do, like one I'm about to discuss. But you can see his role in that defense and how valuable he would be to the success of players like Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith behind him. And then finally, you've got Logan Hall, who, you know, they've got Vita Vea. They've got this big run-stuffing interior defender, and now you've got Logan Hall that can be that three technique to apply pressure on the opposing quarterback and get a little bit more pressure in that defensive front. So I like his fit there for that defense. You can see him making more of those splash plays than some of the other interior defensive linemen in this class.
Go ahead, Travis.
No, I was just going to say those are
off on a totally different tangent. That's
just, it's all good. Those are really good picks. One thing I'll say is, being a Buffalo guy, that why I think Kyer Elam is instant impact too. That number two cornerback role was manned by a former undrafted free agent, Levi Wallace. The Bills got a lot out of him. And then last year, seventh round pick Dane Jackson was pretty good in that cornerback two role. And as Will knows from his time in Carolina, I think Sean McDermott's defense is pretty time tested to be pretty good in terms of getting the most out of their secondary members, that you don't need elite talent and you can still get quality production. But now you insert Kyer Elam, who is an elite talent that ran 4.39 at the combine and will check all those athletic boxes. I think he could be in for a big season. And I love Logan Hall. I think he's going to be, he's someone, and I don't know where the odds are for the defensive rookie of the year. I feel like next to Vita Vea with Shaq Barrett along that defensive line on a good Bucs team, I could see Logan Hall having a ton of pressures, getting some sacks individually, but also having some cleanup sacks, just playing next to those really good players in Vita Vea and Shaq Barrett on that Buccaneers defensive line to garner some defensive rookie of the year hype later in the season.
And then two traps that you had that are a little bit, you know, further down the draft board. Perrion Winfrey, defensive tackle for the Browns, drafted 108 overall. We were hearing, or I guess maybe you heard chatter about him going 33rd overall. Obviously, that seems far-fetched now. And then Tyreek Smith at 158th overall for the Seahawks.
Yeah, Josh picked a Bills guy, so I'm returning the favor and picking a Browns player. I just think Perrion Winfrey's exactly what the Browns defense needs. And Josh could speak to it more. But just to have Myles Garrett, to have other pieces on that defensive line, they also drafted Isaiah Thomas, Perrion Winfrey's teammate from Oklahoma, who I think is a good edge rusher, later in the draft. They just needed that penetrator. I think that's been an issue. We've seen those videos of Myles Garrett getting blocked by like two and three defenders at a time. To have someone that can just get up the field. Perrion Winfrey's not Aaron Donald with his pass rushing moves, but he's just up the field quick. The first step quickness, the snap anticipation, I think, are tremendous. And then Tyreek Smith, you guys talked about the Seahawks draft earlier. I liked Boye Mafe. I think Tyreek Smith is just as ready as a pass rusher to be good in a pass rushing specialist role. He's got the handwork, decently bendy. He was actually a little bit more productive this past season. And then if you count 2020 and 2021, then Boye Mafe was, in terms of generating pressure, like 16% of the time that he rushed the passer, he generated a pressure at Ohio State the past two seasons. That's like almost in line with what Aiden Hutchinson did over the past 2 years at Michigan. So I think Tyreek Smith will be kind of that late round Seahawks edge rusher who was ultimately productive, especially because he doesn't need to be the guy right away. Having Boye Mafe in front of him, that's probably going to get more opportunities as an early round pick. But I think Tyreek Smith will be productive just in a pass rush specialist role in Pete Carroll's defense.
Thoughts on those guys, Josh?
Well, Cleveland simply needed some help along the interior defensive line, so it really didn't matter who they were going to take at that point in time. I was kind of hoping that Travis Jones might be available to them, but Baltimore, of course, made a sound decision and got to him a couple picks earlier. So Cleveland needed to upgrade the interior defensive line. Winfrey is a guy that, you know, was fantastic at the Senior Bowl. If you get that player, you're getting a steal on day three of the NFL draft, but I thought his film was inconsistent. I didn't think it stacked up to what we saw at the Senior Bowl, so that was a little disappointing. His teammate that you touched on, Isaiah Thomas, I loved him. I mean, I get suckered in to these heavy-handed edge rushers like I did Adi Ogundeji last year out of Notre Dame. I think they're similar kind of players. And then to touch on Tyreek Smith, you know, he's a once highly regarded recruit coming out of high school. You know, they were always hoping that he would – eventually break out and be the type of player that they expected of him recruiting him out of high school. Didn't quite reach that point, but you see the traits that maybe suggest that he was worth a flyer for them on day three. And if it ends up panning out, you've got a great value at a premier position.
All right. Good stuff. By the way, defensive rookie of the year odds. Sorry. I can't stop thinking about this Jerry Jones showing the draft board to reporters after day one of the draft thing. Like the Athletic, John Machota, friend of the show, for the pod, has gone through the Athletic, basically enhanced the photos, zoomed in, and figured out who the top 34 names on the Cowboys draft board were. 14 first rounders, and they said that after the draft, right? Like it checks out. The Cowboys have done this like seven times. in the last 10 years. Jerry's like, no, I swear to God, we had Tyler Smith ahead of Kenny Green. I'm trying to hear. And he's like, I swear to God. I showed him. And Stephen Jones is like, Dad, put that down, please.
Mike McCarthy was not happy either. Like, they were more.
The whole room was like, again?
It was like a solid 5 seconds before anybody was like, maybe you should put that down. It's like,
there are still guys available on that list, man.
The worst part about it is that their top two players are headed to a division rival is what I took from that with Evan Neal and Kayvon Thibodeau. So.
Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal were their 1 and 2 ranked players, and the Giants got them both. And it's like, even if like you couldn't have gotten them, but you know the Giants are sitting there like, you like, thanks.
Appreciate
like,
it.
You think these guys don't know that? Defensive Rookie of the Year Award. Speaking of Kayvon Thibodeau, he is second. I know you
figured
just
it was going to be like
this. Here. Yeah. Caesars and whoever else puts these out, there are 6 guys. Okay, I'm not gonna do it again. But like 6 guys at 10-1 or better. I mean, and maybe even more. Trayvon Walker 5-1, Kayvon Thibodeau 4-1, Aiden Hutchinson 3.5-1, Devin Lloyd, Jermaine Johnson, and Quay Walker 9-1. I don't see how you can bet any of those guys. Certainly Thibodeau, like sacks matter for the Defensive Rookie of the Year Award. Statistics matter. So you need to be somebody who can generate those stats. Trayvon Walker didn't have the stats in college. Victor Garcia in the chat points out, where's Kyle Hamilton? Let's scroll down a little bit, Devo, just see. Hamilton can't be more than 12-1. Stingley, at 11-1. I mean, like Jordan Davis at 12-1. Do you know how hard it will be for Jordan Davis?
A D tackle, yeah, hard.
A defensive tackle to win Defensive Rookie of the Year Award? Like, he'd have to go Aaron Donald. To do it.
Yeah.
I mean, Aaron Donald's probably the last interior defensive lineman to win.
It's usually edge rusher or corner. We got Darius Leonard and Luke Kuechly, but besides that, at linebacker,
it's all about the productive stats that you can put together.
Yeah.
And so I think you want to have an edge rusher more than likely if you don't have a linebacker. That's why we like Jordan Davis last year, because you could pile up tackles potentially. So I think Trayvon Walker, I know, again, didn't have the stats in college, but he's, you got 6 games against the Titans, Colts, and well, I guess Colts have a good offensive line, but anyway, you get the Texans twice. He's going to, they're incentivized to make sure that he has a productive first season, so they don't look like idiots for passing on Aiden Hutchinson that everyone told him to take. And he's going to have, Josh Allen's out there, so he's not going to be the focal point of that defense. Whereas, I think Thibodeau and Hutch are probably going to be, when teams are game planning for those guys, that's what we're looking for. I do think Thibodeau could just be a monster, and people just sort of like got in the draft mindset to allow him to fall where he did. Any thoughts on who you guys would take?
I would probably.
How about that Kyer Elam? Or no, go ahead, Josh. Go ahead.
I do the offensive and the defensive rookie of the year race each year, tracking it on a weekly basis. And what I have found is that it is typically an edge rusher that averages 9 sacks or more per season. So that's kind of what you
actually
look
have
for.
You actually have like impactful information for this.
Yeah. So do I see that from any of these rookies? I think Kayvon Thibodeau probably has the talent to reach that point. But like you said, he's going to be keyed on in that defense because they don't have somebody opposite of him that's going to take away some of that pressure. So I look at, and Traps isn't going to like this, but Jermaine Johnson II is a guy that I don't think has quite the ceiling as a Kayvon Thibodeau, but I can see a situation where he's getting cleanup sacks with Quinnen Williams and Carl Lawson in that scheme.
For sure.
And he's going to be an impact performer from day one. I don't think he's got the same ceiling as some of these other guys, but I do think he's going to be a guy that can hit the ground running from day one. So maybe that's somebody that I'm looking at in terms of a value perspective, but steer clear of the linebackers, unless they're going to be used like a Micah Parsons. That's just not going to work for you. Cornerbacks, traditionally, you're not going to get the type of production that you need. So edge rushers is typically where you want to splash on early in the process, because that's where you're going to get the most value.
Yep.
One guy that I think could actually be a good value. I'm just kind of surprised. Boye Mafe is 40-1.
Oh.
I mean,
he'll have a lot of, like I said, yeah. Yeah.
George Karlaftis is another that I would look at because you've got Chris Jones that can take some of the pressure off of him. Frank Clark, if you get him to bounce back a little bit.
Ibukiti.
I think they're going to key on him too much is the only thing. I don't know that they have enough there to kind of take the pressure off of him.
That's fair. Yeah, like he's not going to come in to be like the guy. Like, I mean, now you do get to play Jameis and Sam Darnold / Matt Corral four times.
Not only that, you have to consider the offensive tackles in each of these divisions as well, because that's where the true mismatches lie. So if you're talking about a guy like Jermaine Johnson again, you're going up against New England's offensive tackles. You're going up against Miami's offensive tackles, Buffalo's offensive tackles. In recent years, Miami has been a offensive line that you could exploit a little bit. New England has been pretty sound as long as they're healthy, but Traps can talk about Buffalo a little bit more, but I think it's a solid unit overall.
No, I think I agree with that completely. All right, let's get out of here before we get to the hour mark because, Devo has this union gig. It's just a whole thing. He's really starting to lean on me about it. Just kidding. Union's great. Whatever. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Hit the subscribe button on your audio feed. Hit the like button. Subscribe on YouTube as well. Make sure you turn on alerts. And for Traps, for Josh, I'm Brinson. We will see you guys later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.